Have a question, please. Yes, sir.
With regard to adjudication, does the water board have any effect on, or will they take a stand on how the money is to be appropriated based on adjudication? Do you have any effect on it? Let me ask you that.
We hope that what will happen is the input that we receive from these public hearings will have an effect on the total overall package. And we haven't heard too much about the adjudication as far as the monetary input is concerned. What we have heard to this point is, so far, everyone is pretty much in favor of the adjudication idea. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Another question. Suppose the during the summer the flow falls, the flow at Murphy Gate falls below 3,900. What happens?
Two things could happen. One, I don't mark on you could ask the state for what they're going to maintain the water guarantee to them. Providing no new uses have been in place, nothing would happen in the state below 3,900. I hope Powers agreed to protest only new applicants for water in place after signing the agreement. If people are in place and director shut down, I hope Powers would not go after continued shutoffs of people who were in place before the agreement. Yes, considerably, the flow will be at some time below 3,900. The farmer can only take action under the agreement against the demand.
You might, Mr. Sherman, if you would point out what the recorded historic low flows have been winter and summer.
It gets me an embarrassing question because I don't know what the historic low and where it is. I think it's around 1600. High, well above 56. In fact, the compromise values from 5 on a chart sort of fall between historic low and what the old river counter was. What was that figure, please? 6,100 CFS.
How many?
61?
61.
The summertime flow has been as low as 4,500 CFS on a daily average. And that's greenway to capital. You don't want to try doing instantaneous flows. Anything longer than a day, you have to wait to gather your data before you take any action. So daily average is the number we're talking about.
Over a period of how long do you take that average?
One day. In any one day, the average is less, has never been less than 4,500. And the plan was saying in any one day, it should never be less than 3,500.
Did that go back to 1977?
No.
It didn't occur in 77.
I honestly don't know. I didn't even bring that information with me on this trip. I have to admit.
Are you saying it was above 39?
Well, I'm saying it was above 45
in 77.
Yes.
Oh.
77 wasn't, in terms of Operation Reuben, wasn't that really a year. The lowest it's ever been at Murphy on the one day average is 4,500. That's fine. It really happens two different times. It happened in 1981, I think. And it happens back, if you run a computer model back of current development back to the 30s. I think it happened once in the 60s on a computer model.
It happened in 61, 62.
I'm not saying that's a nice magic number. My water's always going to be there, because as a groundwater man, I always point out that if that flow is 1,000 Springs discharge, what's happened in 1,000 Springs in the last 30 years? The discharge from 1,000 Springs has been going down. But there should be, because we've never been below 4,500, there should be some room to flow.
Why doesn't that go away to flow?
If it ever does go way below, anybody who's got a water right that's younger than the signing agreement.
Letting move the wells up through there?
Absolutely. That's why I'd like to see us have a third one, because I could operate one. Suggest maybe a problem, because shutting off the wells up through here doesn't do us a bit of good in terms of that flow. But, according to state law, the director would have to shut off everybody junior, whether they were groundwater pump or horses.
Dr. Brockway.
I just might comment on that. Isn't it true that he would have to shut them off only if he could show they were impacting the current efficiency?
Yes.
Which would be hard to do in the act.
Yeah, but I don't think it would. I couldn't show the individual, but I think I could show a trend in decline in spring. You'd show that, absent the ability to shut the well off right now and have an effect, I have to say you can never do it. Because that event might reoccur itself. By law, that's our history in our better. That's why I'm not approving any of them right now. I have to protect your contract in one of them. So in order to make sure 3900 doesn't be violated, I've got to manage that system to make sure it doesn't. So instead of saying we've got 600 CFS for propane, I'm really going to have to be substantially less than that to make damn sure we don't violate it. That's why we said, if you got some storage, you can make the decision of how much you're going to go, and then from that point on, you use the storage.
Mr. Shaw.
Joe, you do understand when you said wells, that's only the wells since last October that would be drilled, not the, anything prior to October.
What if this 1,000 springs drops real bad? Where are they going to get the water to fill that 3900?
If the person has proven up on his water before the agreement was signed, we can't touch him under the terms of the agreement.
Wells included.
Wells included.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Kramer.
Let's talk a little bit about what Dr. Brockway mentioned about the off-stream storage that has been on the books for 10 years between Milner and Murphy. The Little Pilgrim Project, I think, was filed on years ago, and they have a filing to pump water area to an off-stream storage, and right here it says no water will be pumped out. Where does that project stand, and do they have any more right than the person that is fighting today on that particular water? Can you answer any of that?
Okay. Three or four different answers for you. I have to apologize, it's a mistake on the part of staff. Looked at. Pretty good reason why we didn't. What we struggle with that is the negotiators who put the compromise together couldn't agree on how to counter the mitigation. The board approached the negotiators with some proposed language on how to counter the mitigation, and they couldn't agree to that. So he said, please delay this project. We hate to see the whole agreement go down the fuse mode. Calculation of mitigation for an off-stream wintertime storage in one small, relatively small region. We haven't really done a good job on that one, but there's some reasons for it. In terms of Little Pilgrim, where do they stand? They stand, as far as I can tell, with any new appropriator of water, because they have not put water to beneficial use before it's signed.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Kramer.
So what you're saying is that particular filing and right will have to be mitigated between them and the power, water use, the block of water that they're going to pull out.
With the director of the water board acting as referee. With the director in the ring and the water board being a judge of it. Yes.
Dr. Brockway, I have a question. We've heard some concern on policy 32I referring to your storage. We also see a trend in the state of Idaho, and let's just take agriculture and set it aside because it is the backbone of southern Idaho and it needs to be protected, obviously. But we do have changing demands in water, and with that, no doubt, we will have changing water laws within the state of Ireland. Do you see a problem with new storage when it comes to future recreational uses, fisheries uses, wildlife uses, etc.? Because we are hearing a lot of comments in that direction as we're coming back.
Well, there will be problems with new storage. Those problems won't be problems to everybody. They won't be problems to irrigating people. But there'll be problems to fish, recreation, and wildlife. I think we need to take another good hard look at new storage in the upper Snakeset. I think there's potential for additional storage that can be managed and provide better management of the total resource. It will be more difficult now to implement any new storage because of the competing concerns that we didn't have 30 years ago or 40 years ago. But I really believe that we need to look harder at new storage as a procedure for helping us optimize the use of the total water resource. And that needs to be coupled with aquifer storage and regulation and management as well. We can't just manage the surface waters of the state or the surface waters of the Snake River and neglect the aquifer systems that are intimately related with the river system. We need to do that, and we need to have, in my opinion, better data and better tools to do it with. That's why I asked the question about the hydrologic studies and economic study funding, that to me are the backbone of providing the ability for the department to make evaluations of how beneficial is new storage. How can you better manage the aquifer river system? Do not go below 39. There are some things you can do management-wise in the river to regulate and to keep the 3900 there. And new storage would help. Because I commented on the state buying storage and using it as a slush fund, that doesn't mean I'm not saying there shouldn't be new storage value. I think there should. My comment is I don't think that the state ought to be in a position of owning storage as a buffer for management.
Mr. Dunn.
Well, I could check a comment on this. Well, one of the things we're looking at in terms of owning storage is or owning the medical allocated storage, wherever it's at. Is it the board, the state own that, and they're able to pay for that through leases for the power company from the power sector? And then we get to the point where development has occurred and we are in jeopardy of violating the agreement and can't make the lease. One of the thoughts is that the new appropriate if you're going to use water that will cost $3,900 to get in trouble, the people that are doing that ought to pay for storage because nobody knows exactly what happens when you take water out of that. You have to make some assumptions. If you make the assumptions and the guy is appropriate, knows there's something and knows the risk of not there being wrong, you've got to pay in the future. That's some of the things we're looking at.
Well, if you got into the storage business, I would say that's an equitable way of funding if you got into it. I don't know. It's certainly not traditional for the state of Idaho. That doesn't mean it shouldn't be looked at pretty close.
The problem is that nobody can go out and buy a couple of your feet of the building. You've got to go out and buy a chunk of the reservoir, and you don't get it. So somebody's got to be the catalyst, be it the state or whoever, somebody's got to buy a chunk so people can buy these pieces.
What happens, though? Can we get down, you know, we're right in the brink there, $3,900, and whoops, we made a mistake. And for 3 years or 5 years or whatever, the projected sold at home at $3,700. And so that means you got to draw on that storage. And maybe if we overshot too far, you got to draw on it perpetually. It no longer becomes a buffer, it becomes hardwired in the system. Would you manage any different if you had that?
Sure, you end up cutting people off. I mean, the water supply is a finite number. You make the best estimate you can. You can't say, well, we can't make decisions if we don't have all the data. That's not the way life operates. You take the best data you have, and you make the best decision you can. And if you're wrong, you're wrong. We have to go back to principle. And, you know, given all the variables, the chances of being exactly right are nil. Like an economist, you know, if you make a projection, you're probably going to be wrong. But you may be close. That's about all we can do in that thing. Is hope we get close enough that we've got some kind of Christian accomplishment. Without any storage, don't look for 600. And some lesser number, I guarantee that. We don't dare get the exactly 600 based on our estimates of the solution. You either stretch it out or you shorten it up.
Well, Mr. Dunn, wouldn't it be in the public interest to have other upstream storages? Dr. Brockway talks about covering mismanagement of water. But it would appear to me that if somehow, through the process, we actually did mismanage water, that's not going to be done on purpose. It may be because of the state of the art at the time that caused it. But wouldn't it be in public interest to have other new storages just to cover those contingencies?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Jeff, don't you think that it might be easier to build new storage once you get everyone involved? The problem with the storages we have built up till now, it's been agriculture and power, and they're the only two that has put the bucks in to build the storage. Any storage that is going to be built from now on, I think everybody will participate in. Therefore, there will be more people that owns the water, maybe there will be a bigger buffer. We hear, as we go up and down the year, they want more water for fish, they want more water for recreation. It's high time that those people start putting up the bucks if we're going to build storage, because those people is doing the yelling. So we may have an easier time to build storage than we've had up till now. It's going to be tough for agriculture building more storage.
Mr. Chairman?
Dr.
Brown. Well, I think you'll find it. Certainly, the demands are greater from a wider segment of the populace than they ever have been. I think you'll also find, if you look at the record, that those who cry the loudest have the least money. I don't know that that will continue forever, but that's historically the way it's been. And so you may have all people crying, but not willing to really shoulder the load.
Of course, the farmers are going broke, doing a lot of crying.
Gene?
Yes, Mr. Haas.
Chuck, on your comment about measuring consumptive use for DCMI, and I agree with you on all the difficulties. It seems to me that the only alternative to that is not have an allocation. Is that what you were suggesting, that there not be an allocation? Specific allocation made to DCMI?
Well,
see here, you have two choices. Either you allocate or you don't. If you allocate, you have to measure something or try your best. Were you suggesting no allocation?
I'm saying you shouldn't have some sort of allocation. I don't know how you came up with 150 CFS.
It was in the part of the agreement package. Negotiators.
Some lawyer put it together. certainly, the state could adopt a policy of a certain amount of estimated consumptive use required for DCMI. My problem is the regulation, the determination of, if a guy comes in with an application for a water line or for a permit, and he says, I want to divert 4 CFS for my fish processing. What guidelines will you use to determine what part of that 150 CFS consumption we allocated that guy's going to use?
What? I'm not disagreeing at all, Chuck, and I guess we would use the best guess
whatever
we had.
But
I think our choice, you know, either forgetting whether it's 150 or the number, I think that's not important. But you're saying that, I'm not sure what your testimony is there, I guess. I agree with the difficulty, but it seemed to me like you have a choice. Either you make an allocation or you don't. If you make an allocation, then you have to some way try to measure it or something. The alternative to make an allocation is to say there will be no allocation for any types of uses, and whoever gets there first, fine, and when the director thinks the total is close enough to where we're getting the 3,900, you shut it off.
Let me pose a question and in opposition to the allocation procedure.
Okay.
Let's suppose that I'm the 1,201th guy that comes in with an application for some kind of commercial water business. And I come in and I need 2 CFS, and you say, no, you can only have 1 CFS because we've determined that that's all you need. But lo and behold, if you add up all the figures, that comes out to 151 CFS. So you deny the permit. On what basis can you really make that stick as compared with an irrigator or with some other user? Is it defensible to set up an arbitrary allocation for specific uses when everybody in the state is supposed to have equal opportunity?
Mr. Paz, do you have anything else?
I'm not going to answer that when the director goes ahead. That's
done. it's totally defensible. The problem is that we get into a situation where everybody wants a exact finite answer, and you don't have that. And if we look at evaporative transpiration, we made decisions on water supply based on evaporative transpiration. Using blank equipment. In the country, you know, it's not right. It's wrong. We have to, we'll make the changes now. But at the time, it was the best we had, and you make the dang decision right off, the best you got. You get more information, you can change. You come in with DCMI, and you get down to the last second foot as we know it, and the guy only gets one. He doesn't get two. It's defensible. Unless he can show that we're wrong up to that point. And it's one person's word, I guess, against the other. But absent precise data, you use the best thing you can get done. And that's some assumed judgment. Actually, we do that all the time in allocation process. But again, it's the reason you need some kind of fishing. With 150 out, I'm saved for DCMI. On the other side of the agenda, we're down to 450 now for the other consumptive use. You've got to be more careful as you start allocating that. Better data we get, better decisions. If we continue the way we are now, we're going to get some pretty broad decisions. 150, we're going to be careful that we don't allow everything to exceed 3.4. But beyond that, let's assume that we're going through just a fallacious development in this state with non-agricultural purposes, just DCMI. And all of a sudden we're using all that, but we haven't got used up to 450 yet, for whatever reason. the answer to that then is from the board, in addressing the water plant, you say, well, we reserved 150 for DCMI, but obviously we were wrong. We've got more use for that kind of water than anticipated, and we're raising 200. Reduce the other 400, because it's set in policy. It's not set in law. Change the allocation and go ahead. That's the advantage of having it as a policy for the state, so we know what we're following, and we can see how the things are addressing it.
Well, I think one thing to keep in mind also, that by law, the state water plan has to be updated on a 5-year basis, so those things are not, written in blood. Mr. Sherman?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'd like Frank to help me explain something to Elmer's concerns here. Say we go through with the change the water plan, policy 32, no problems. Legislature gets in a fight, they never get anything done. Aren't I right saying that we won't have a changed water plan if that happens, Frank?
It's very likely. Your next board meeting is not scheduled until early March. If you can't read the legislature by then, maybe you shouldn't be on the board. Maybe the legislature will be so deadlocked you can reach a decision that way too. The other thing that happens, of course, is with passing the initiative last November, the water board no longer has the real final say in the state water plan. They can adopt 3900, and the legislature isn't making any moves to implement the agreement. The legislature can change it back to 3,300, like that. And some people might ask the question, why is the board going to allow coming out for public hearings and we held information meetings and all the rest? That's because the board still is responsible for forming a policy in the state. The legislature now can review and change the water plan. I think the board feels even more strongly that they need public input to the water plan. So it's less likely that the legislature will change the plan. But if they adopt the 39 and 56 and the agreement's not going to be placed, I feel fairly confident the legislature will change that back to 33. And in fact, the boards themselves could change it back, but it would be faster if the legislature did. They do it one day, the board would probably hold some more public hearings.
Thank you, Frank.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
There's a lot of debt about everybody giving all they can and that, but there's not much debt about beneficial use and proof of beneficial use from the efficient user. I wonder why that's not been addressed.
I think I'll try that one, Mr. Chairman, or I'm not going to do a good job of it. The agreement in no way changes beneficial use requirements that are already in place. Now, what exploring the maximum use of stored water, for example, may do to show that state law as it exists today is actually a disincentive to be more efficient user. And as that thing gets flushed out, and I say the board has accepted the responsibility to try and at least look at the stored water, as that gets flushed out, it may be possible that we can see changes the law, which really, as I said earlier, it's an example. A person who, this would be a different example, but if a person was out there 5 acre feet per acre and he figured out he only needs 3, those 2 acre feet are really part of his water right there. He can't sell them to somebody else to put it on new ground because that's expanding the number of acres being irrigated with the same piece of water. And that's one of the laws that it sounds easy to change, but it really isn't. That's sort of a guarantee about how things work in the system. But it's one that should be looked at locally. We're always caught at the department, at least, between how do you encourage more efficient use of water if there's no profit or return to the individual farm. We see all these center pivots going in, and we know they're energy efficient, they're water efficient. The reason they're going in is because they're labor efficient. And I think the agreement and these changes in the water plan, which reflect the agreement, were specific to a problem at Swan Falls, and the intent was to resolve as many problems in the whole basin as they could. They don't pretend to solve the problem the board's been
worrying about for 2 years. How do you manage the groundwater resources in the state of Pennsylvania? They don't solve the barriers to efficient use of water. It does ask at least to look at stormwater question.
Go ahead.
I had concern too about a lot of generators that are going in at the Deer Dam. They can be more efficient. And is that need from licensing based on a kilowatt, water that generates so many kilowatts? Or can they expand their kilowatts and by their efficiency?
I think you've got a two-pronged question out here, and I'll try and answer it, and maybe the director can string that up if I don't satisfy you. In terms of generating power with existing water, you're going to a non-consumptive use of water. If a ditch company, an irrigation ditch, whatever, were to run that water through the generator rather than putting it on their lands, that is not what their original water right was for. They'd be jeopardizing that water right by not putting it on the ground that they use to provide.
And if I have become more efficient on my water right and can't utilize the whole right for a year, they could say, oh, you can't prove the beneficial use of that water and you don't need it anymore.
That, unfortunately, is 100% correct.
And that's existing law.
That's all I've had anything to do with this. That's but if I wanted to get out from the water boards here in this here area, they protect any fishing user and he's running water off adjacent land. And they're not doing anything about that. And they say, well, if you become efficient, all that money you spend to get efficient, we'll reward you with a bale of hay.
And that's true. What Frank said was existing state law may not be the best there is in the world, but the Swan Falls Agreement can't address that. It's not intended to address it. And I think that's something we need as a state to look at in the future for what we're going to do with our water. You can't solve what the Swan Falls Agreement.
Yes, sir.
I understand there's some river basin tributary to the Snake River in Western Idaho where they have already recently adjudicated their water. These people are objecting to having to help pay for adjudication already. Where do we stand on that? Where do they stand on that?
It's true that particularly the Payette is the example that is frequently cited where there were some 9,000 water rights down to 10 or 11 court cases and that adjudication will be finished. Why should they be asked to help pay for it? Let's start out with why is the adjudication at this time going to start at Lewis? To bring in the federal government to participate state adjudication, state courts, you have to do a system adjudication. The negotiators and lawyers within the state field, there's no question that if you start at Lewiston and include the Clearwater and Salmon Rivers, you're doing a systems adjudication. I think the hope would be that we can negotiate with the federal government and the Indian tribes and perhaps start the adjudication at Swan Falls. More realistic point in terms of the water rights contribution will come to stop. If that were to happen, Payette people would be out of the picture. Why should they pay if they're included? Historically, adjudications have been done at the general expense of the state. The Payette adjudication was paid with general funds money. The water users in that area contributed no money towards adjudication. This Swan Falls agreement, the Snake River Basin adjudication, is so large and so complicated that it couldn't be paid out of state general funds unless we stretch it out over 40 or 50 years instead of the 10 indirectly. Optimistic.
They're going to get the benefit of the adjudication. They're going to be incorporated into the whole basin-wide picture. Their rights are going to be quantified along with everybody else in the basin. In terms of what they would have to do except help support the adjudication within their part of the state, they won't have to do anything. That court decree will be incorporated into the new court decree. They got a free adjudication. They don't want to pay now to help solve a major regional problem.
And they won't be paying. Payette, Glenmire, the two general adjudications that have been considered. The statutes that have been drafted does not provide for them to pay for those adjudications.
In fact, what they've already done is passed them.
Sure. We've done the adjudication. We filed with the court. Provision in the statute in the new bill says that if those filings were made to the court prior to a specific date, and forget the date right offhand, they're not subject to these fees, and that's the case.
Why
would they be wrong? Because I don't know. You know, I've explained that to Representative
Liv, or you address the question again? We didn't hear it.
Well, I just asked why they would be opposed to it then. Adjudication, yet they don't have to pay.
I explained that to Representative Little several times, and he's still concerned about it. I don't know. Well, let me read the draft statute for you, it takes about 10 seconds.
I would think many more like me didn't realize they changed that.
About everybody.
Yeah.
The fee schedule set forth below applies to adjudication proceedings commenced or enlarged on or after January 1st, 1985, and to adjudication proceedings for which a proposed finding of a water right has not been filed in the appropriate district court by the Department of Water Resources. They apply if the findings have not been filed. In the Lemmon, they have been filed. In the CAF, they have been filed. Therefore, the fees don't apply. And I can't get anybody to understand that.
Yeah.
The intent is not to redo the payout, not redo the money, not charge.
Ken, how does that language relate to some of the older decrees that have been filed? Is there some period in there?
That there's only two general adjudications
okay.
in the state.
Okay. It's a general adjudication.
Everything else that has been done, a sweetheart deal between the Bush and Washington.
And it refers to general adjudication.
Yes. Dr. Brockman.
I have a question, I guess, for the director, and address this gentleman's concern about the expansion of the water rights to new lands. Is there provisions in the agreement for grandfathering those individuals who have expanded their rights prior to the agreement, albeit illegally?
There is a House Bill 71 which is being considered, which would provide that where an expansion occurred under a valid water right that was unadjudicated, that expansion could be taken care of. And it would be with a priority date as of the expansion. Somebody didn't file the claims as they should, they've gone ahead and expand. It says expansion of use after acquisition of a valid unadjudicated water right in violation of the mandatory permit requirement. Remember, in groundwater, if you did that after 1963 by law, you had to have a permit. So we're saying if it was done by an expansion in violation of the mandatory permit requirements, it shall be presumed to be valid and to have created a water right with a priority date as of the completion of the expansion. any absence of injuries or other appropriate. So House Bill 71 takes care, decides to take care of anyway, that expansion that occurred in violation of the mandatory permit system by giving it a data priority as an expansion. It also talks about the expansion where the water right had been previously adjudicated. But the courts in the, like the Rexburg decree and various other of the three or four small decrees that have gone out of the system, where the court at one time adjudicated it, and in the passage of time, the irrigated acres may have shrunk or grown, or all kinds of different factors of the amount of land that's actually irrigated with water. We say that once the adjudication is started, that the lands that were presently being irrigated will be considered to have the same priority as the original adjudication. We won't worry about when they came in. That'll, I think, take care of the question of whether a canal company has a water rights so far under 1890, and some are 1892, and some are 1896, and they've got a whole array of priorities. If the original decree said 1890, well, look at how much you're getting down, that's what the right would be. Right or wrong, that's what the law would say.
Joe, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was wondering what ever happened to that here a few years ago. They was talking about recharging the bank. Never heard anything more about it. It was quite a stir about it once.
Dr. Brockway,
I was kind of hopes it would fill it up so it would come out with that pump.
Dr. Brockway is more knowledgeable about the exact details because he's been working with those people. In fact, last spring, the first pilot test was done in the group of Jerome and data was collected on how fast water would go into the mound, where it wanted to travel to. Some water quality data was collected because there are lots of barriers that seem to be developing new barriers to this kind of operation. But we anticipate water will be going in the ground out there again next year, or this year now, so we were named by this year again. In terms of why don't we see more artificial recharge in the state and in some parts of the state, you have to realize that once that water goes in the ground, the person who's putting it there loses control of it. You can spend a lot of money putting water in the ground and not getting it back, except local production of pumping up, perhaps. A project that's been going on is funded to a large degree by the trout farming industry, and they're concerned about the water that comes out of down the springs. They know that more hits in the ground, at least no less is going to come out before the rain. So they are willing to support in that sense. There's some real barriers in terms of water quality, and that the only kind of places you can get big volumes of water down in the ground are basically where you're dumping out the raw salt. The raw salt doesn't do much of filtering or purifying. There's a real concern about that. The people down at Oakley are certainly looking very hard at artificial recharge. They're in the fortunate situation, or the unfortunate situation, they've drawn their water levels so down they can hardly afford to pump them. They're fortunate in the sense they have probably a pretty good incumbent depression underneath their property. And if they can get it in there, it's not going to get out because they're drawing water in all directions towards them. So it takes a real unusual set of circumstances before it becomes economically attractive.
Mr. Dunn.
I'd like to ask Chuck Brockway for his comments on the natural or semi-natural recharge that's occurring on the Egypt Bench. What do you think the effect might be on the Snake Plain if that were halted? In other words, if that converts to spring irrigation as opposed to the president. Dr. Marshall.
Well, the Egypt Bench